From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and if you're listening in Chicago, happy David Bowie Day. Yes, Mayor Rahm Emanuel has shown what exquisite taste he has in music and in proclaiming things by proclaiming today David Bowie Day in Chicago. That's because the museum exhibit known as David Bowie Is open today at Chicago's Museum of Contemporary Art and runs through January 4th. To see it, you either have to go to Chicago or go see the documentary film that opened around the country tonight. I did the latter, and I'll have a review later. Also, live music from the Nashville rock band Those Darlins. But first, let me give you a two-word review of the new Robert Plant record. It's awesome. 'Cause there is somebody there, I know. There is somebody there. The singer Robert Plant has lived many musical lives during his five decades in the business. His voice has been the wail of a golden god on a mountaintop. It's been the cool counterpoint to Alison Krauss. And at least occasionally on his latest record, Lullaby and the Ceaseless Roar, it's the sound of a voyager meditating on his many travels. Robert Plant has traveled back here to our Soundcheck studio today. Good to see you.
What a great introduction. I wonder if I was ever doing any of those things. Yes.
Well, I mean, do you feel like there's a sense of homecoming and
sure.
and kind of retrospection and something that's happened during your travels here in the States at work here?
Well, I think for sure there are times in your life when you go out and you ride the great big waves into the wide blue yonder, you know, and I continue to do that. And I think I used home as somewhere to recharge and refuel without really taking in too much of the actual luster and the joy of what that home is. Mm. And it's not something that's tangible. It's not something that is there and you can photograph it, take your phone out and say, you know, it's just a condition. And I think that despite my sort of wanderlust, which I'm pleased to be a passenger to, mm-hmm. almost, I did make a couple of journeys out into the out there somewhere and came back, and bit by bit it dawned on me that it was almost as if I was having a kind of removal of some kind of cataracts of I just suddenly saw this condition returning to me as I was when I was a child.
So
that was far out, really.
Did you get the sense in the making of this record that you were, consciously or not, weaving together these different musical threads, Americana, rock music, world music, the things that we've known you to be a fan of over the years?
Well, not consciously. I think I just I got back together with old friends who were already, each of them, in some way or another, in their own place, ploughing their own furrow, and it was really more a case of the idea of an amalgamation, of bringing it all together and seeing what that would turn into. And it's kind of like a kind of hybrid of all those conditions, really, you know. And I think really that satisfies me because it is an unusual, if you take each of the elements, put them together, it's an unusual combination. But because I let different areas of it become more prominent at different times, it has its own world.
There is a strangely organic quality to something like, for example, Little Maggie, this great old American bluegrass song that you give. It's got a West African kind of groove, but a nod to the Bristol bands like Portishead and Massive Attack.
That's right.
This is the opening track from Robert Plant's latest album called Lullaby and the Ceaseless Roar.
Love.
just a little bit of Little Maggie, the opening track on Robert Plant's latest album called Lullaby and the Ceaseless Roar. Julie Kamara's Gambian fiddle sounds so at home in, in that setting.
Yeah, as the track proceeds from that point where you fade it out, it becomes much more urban Bristol. So the... You see, Dave Smith, the drummer, he went out to Gambia when he was a student, and he was hanging out with the various griots out there learning those rhythms. So between he and Jode, they can cook these backbeat rhythms, which become something that's not that too far away from some of the black American stuff that's around now. And at the same time, when John Baggett comes in with the kind of massive attack loops further on into the track, it basically takes what is essentially an Appalachian song, I guess, or a murder ballad or whatever it is, which I tried to, I mean, me and Alison Krauss tried to kill this song and we made such a mess of it that I really wanted to do it as a kind of smile. I was with her the day before yesterday and I was telling her about it. And she said, "You done Little Maggie?" I said, "Yeah, you're going to really love it." So you can imagine Union Station trying to get the head around that. It's kind of funny in a way. Because I wanted the album to start with this impression of carrying on from the Band of Joy and carrying on. And then as the track develops, you get an idea that we mean British business and African business in, as well.
And, and those businesses are not, you know, parallel tracks. They do converge.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That you've gone back. I mean, Justin Adams, the guitarist, he and Julie Kamara have a longstanding, you know, relationship, lots of great records. And they really have sort of plied that, you know, they've mined that deep, deep well that all of our music came from.
Sure, yeah, it's true, because a lot of the North and West African music has very, very deep sort of parallels with the Celtic music that ended up on the west coast of Scotland and Ireland. And the scale's something. And yet when you go from Gambia, where Jode's from, into Mali, you get the one chord music, which becomes Tanarawen, which...
The desert blues.
Yeah, which if you pump a big, big toot of it straight across into Mississippi, you've got R.L. Burnside meeting John Lee Hooker, meeting King Solomon Hill and all that stuff. So, yeah, it's a small world, you know, especially when you have ships full of people who don't want to go where they're going.
Yeah. Well, now, you talked about, you know, going home after living here in the States for a number of years. Home is, as I recall, pretty close to Wales.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's always a Welsh mythology.
The Celtic kingdoms, yeah.
Yeah, that seems to always have been a constant for you.
Well, I was lucky as a kid. My parents were one of the few people in the street to have a car in the early 50s. After the war, it was a pretty grey time for Britain. We were bombed out and completely knackered. So they managed to take me off into the Welsh borders and show me castles and hill forts and invisible things in the ground that you would have to look at from a map or whatever. The maps show you at various historical elements that have almost disappeared. So I became pretty... I fell in love with everything that you couldn't quite see and that you could. So my lyrics, naively in the late 60s and early 70s, were leaning very heavily on the Misty Mountains. And I guess I never feel any better than when I'm there.
Yeah.
You know, it's great. It never stops raining, but it's beautiful.
Well, in the song A Stolen Kiss, from which the album title comes, Lullaby and the Ceaseless Roar, you are again referring to the Western Shore, as you did famously so many years ago with Led Zeppelin. And that Western Shore, you know, that, I mean, that's a very kind of Celtic, ancient sort of image, isn't it?
Well, it's where the sun goes down. And it's also in olden times, way back, it was the end of the world. You know, no boat went beyond Ireland or whatever. And when you read the very earliest British poetry and Irish poetry and the Saxon poetry, you hear the tales of Beowulf and the great sagas. And you do find that you've got the full power of the Atlantic coming in to the Western Shore. It's a very dramatic and rejuvenating life force there. And I go there to top up the ridiculousness that I am, I guess. And I do feel it really, you know, when the sea and the sky meld into the same oily blue colours, you know, somebody comes along and blows a whistle and puts me back in the van and says, OK, you've had enough of that now. Go to Manhattan.
Robert Plant is with us on Soundcheck. His new album is called Lullaby and the Ceaseless Roar. It is a lyric in this song called A Stolen Kiss. Is a stolen kiss from my guest Robert Plant. His latest album is Lullaby and the Ceaseless Roar. There's some very atmospheric guitar playing on that track, and beautifully recorded piano too. A very kind of a little bit of an outlier from this record. A little bit of a different sound. Was it recorded separately?
Well, the piano was dropped on. I mean, most everything was recorded in a very small and noble barn, very casually created, and really basically everything that's on the record was a sort of the beginnings of ideas that just became real things as we went along, and it was a very short sojourn really into creation. I think it's we were looking to try and create something outside of the mesh of loops and samples and rhythm, and John Baggett, he's a beautiful piano player outside of his work in the sort of contemporary keyboard world. And he presented this song, and I took it home and started working on it, and it didn't have a bridge or anything. And I got my guitar and started messing around to take it somewhere. And I thought about the outro of Pain in My Heart by Otis Redding, or Come to Me, or, you know. And I wanted to get something where the chords moved and it's a great suspension of intention. And in doing so, I knew that that had to be the punchline of the whole album, really. Or the punchline of me, more so.
This song really does have that sense of maybe not travel, but having traveled and now arrived somewhere.
Yeah, but not really even arriving. I mean, it's the condition is wonderful. It's great. I mean, in the old days in Zeppelin, when we used to see our peer group taking it easy, we used to say, pipe and slippers. You know, that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
It's 34 years since it stopped. So there's no pipe and slippers, sadly.
Do you still look down the road and think someday pipe and slippers, or is that just not you?
No, I can't see that.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you about the time you spent, you know, you spent so much time here in the States, Nashville, Austin. Roseanne Cash, the last time she was on the show, the daughter of Johnny Cash, was talking about when she made her last record, sort of traveling through Mississippi, you know, going to the Delta, driving on Route 66, walking across the Tallahatchie Bridge. Did you do any of that stuff?
Well, I've got a lot of friends in North Mississippi and from Memphis on down. I didn't see it as being, you know, part of the Mississippi Blues tour. I just saw it as going back to find the guys that set me on fire in the first place, really, and seeing what happened. I went there in about... I took that Highway 61, the famous road south of Memphis, and I got as far as Robinsonville, I knew Robert Johnson was raised in Commerce, Mississippi, and I wrote a song called Walking into Clarksdale with Paige way back. But, you know, I've had collisions with Robert Jr. Lockwood and people like, you know, over the years, people who were around at that time. But for me, as a kid, I couldn't. Gary Puckett and everybody, I loved all that. Dion was my hero as a sort of sexy singer, if you like, vocally. But I was drawn to The Wolf and to Robert Johnson and all that. So I go down there quite a lot. And I've always gone in the middle of a tour where the adrenaline's up. So more recently I went when there was nothing but time. And then I started seeing things differently.
Mm. There's a lyric that really struck me on the new album from the song Turn It Up, where you say, I'm lost inside America. The full line is, I'm lost inside America, I'm turning inside out, I'm turning into someone else I heard so much about. I mean, that I'm not sure I know what that means, but those lines really kind of stuck out for me.
Yeah, well, how well do you know me? You don't know me. You know, you know this,
yeah,
and this is a lot of me, but you don't know the guy that doesn't need to be, you know, the guy in the airport.
Right.
The guy with the selfies and the guy who actually is supposed to be something else, you know. Always expectations are what they are, but underneath it all there's a heart and soul. And when you're so far away from, I suppose, some kind of neutrality, the Misty Mountain type of thing, you know, you realize I'm on it most of the time in my life. Mm-hmm. I'm not a recluse and I'm not hiding. So I did find that, you know, it was quite an experience to be on it in almost indefinitely. And because I spent so much time traveling through the South, that was probably a lot easier than going through LA, you know. But but anyway, it was an observation. Yeah. And so I'd, you know, turn on the radio and let me out. Maybe if I hear my voice on the radio, I can fly out of the speakers and out of the window and into the cypress grove.
Off to the pipe and slippers.
No, I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. Here's the song. It's called Turn It Up from Robert Plant's latest Lullaby and the Ceaseless Roar.
Oh, my disconnection. I'm not alone somewhere. I reach out to the radio and I'm clinically disturbed. Give it up, the man said. Surrender and be safe. He'll drive away your demons, his help is on the way. Turn it up, oh, turn it up.
Turn It Up is the name of the song from Robert Plant from his latest album called Lullaby and the Ceaseless Roar. Robert Plant and the Sensational Space Shifters are performing at BAM on September 27th and 28th, part of the long celebration of the 50th anniversary of Nonesuch Records, on which label the album appears. Robert Plant with me here in the Soundcheck studio. And on one of your previous visits to the show, this would have been a couple of years ago, you mentioned your local soccer team, Wolverhampton Wanderers. You were on their board for a while, weren't you? Or involved somehow with the
team?
No,
it's worse than that.
It's worse than that.
Yeah, I've got the cyanide capsule because by the side of the hammock in the back of the truck, because it's since I was about 4 or 5, I was taken, transported there. And to see, in those days, in the 50s, we were the first team to bring European football to the UK and on a club level. And we were real sort of trailblazers then. But since then, it's been a kind of very much of a kind of a fairground attraction. But I'm besotted. My children, my grandchildren, I go all the time. I have to go wherever it is. And I am lifetime vice president of the club.
Wow.
Well, it doesn't cost me anything. sometimes I wear a suit and tie and meet dignitaries, but mostly I'm in the stands with all my mates.
Okay. And your boys are doing pretty well so far this season.
Yeah, right? Well, they
towards
drew...
the top of the table.
Yeah, they're fourth at the moment. Yeah. A couple of draws recently. It's not very good.
If the singing thing hadn't happened, would you have been a footballer?
Well, I'd have been a bad one. I bribed my way into Sunday football.
Yeah.
I just love the whole thing. I mean, maybe football is a bit like being in a band, you know. It's a similar sort of thing. You talk about it. You have your moments of great elation and stuff like that. And then you have it's cracking stuff.
Yeah. And, like a good band, a good team is genuinely a team.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You may have superstars, but they have to know how to work together.
Well, they have to do that. And the dressing room is essential. It's the dressing room before we go on stage. Is strong. Joe Day comes to me and he calls me uncle because in those cultures, the oldest guy in the setup is the uncle. And so far, it's cost me nothing except for humorous, countless, amazing humorous moments. You know, it's great stuff.
Well, so if you're still taking penalties, you're obviously keeping in shape. And it is obvious on this record, especially in the song Rainbow, where you hit some beautiful, you just kind of float these high notes, that the instrument is still in shape, too. What do you do for that?
Well, you know, the whole psychosis of this thing about can Plant sing like a woman still, or is he going to leave it to somebody else in another band, is you sing according to the music. You create the music together with other people, and then you sort of intertwine vocal approach and attitude and lyric on top of something that you've created. The melody and the kind of falsettos don't come first. You have to put them on something. And so I've always tried to sing in an appropriate way to suit the sort of tapestry underneath. So when I was working with Patty Griffin or Alison Krauss, I had to modify the natural flamboyance of singing.
Mm-hmm.
As a solo, as an individual singer in Zeppelin or whatever, I was the only one ever singing. So apart from a few dodgy harmonies coming in from other members of the bands. But so to modify is what it's all about. To be a good singer is to sing in accordance with the mood of the music. And so I thought with this approach, that the music is so dense and powerful that if I started becoming hysterical and creating all sorts of amazing, not amazing, but, you know, dynamic vocal parts, I would mess the mood of the songs up. So it comes out now and again. In the world of rock, which is a funny old place now, the leather is starting to crease and crack. The whole deal was like, well, I mean, where is that voice? And that voice is exactly where it needs to be at exactly whatever time. So hopefully, anyway, so far.
Well, it sounds great in this passage from the song Rainbow. This is from Robert Plant's latest album called Lullaby and the Ceaseless Roar.
And reaching for the stars in the sky above, I will bring their beauty home because of my love. Storm is gone, and I will bring my song to you, and I'll carry on.
Robert Plant with Lullaby and the Ceaseless Roar, his most recent album, and the song called Rainbow. It's out now on the Nonesuch label, and Robert Plant and the Sensational Space Shifters are performing as part of the 50th anniversary Nonesuch celebration series at BAM. They'll be there September 27th and September 28th. And Robert, just, you know, there is something timeless about the sound, especially of the rhythm section here. It's so hard to say, oh, no, that's African, or no, that's Bristol, or that's, you know, and that seems to have been part of the point.
I think so. I don't want to, I don't think anybody should be associated entirely with, you know, the whole deal of world music is beautiful and reverential and stuff, but that's not where I'm at, and that's not where anybody should be at in this entourage. We really are grackles. We're magpies, jackdaws. We're stealing a little bit from here and there. Anything that sparkles, you got to put it in the blender.
The Sensational Space Shifters is an apt name for the band headed by vocalist Robert Plant. Robert, it's been so much fun seeing you. Thank you very much.
Nice to see you again. Thanks. Keep up the soccer.
Robert Plant was just telling us about his time in Memphis. Up next, we'll hear a studio performance from a band from the other big music town in Tennessee, Nashville. Those Darlins are here next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. On their third record, the Nashville group called Those Darlins have continued their evolution from their early country roots to something a bit harder and more rockin'. The latest album is called Blur the Line, and they're about to play some stuff from it right here today in the Soundcheck studio. Those Darlins are live with us on Soundcheck. This song is the title track, Blur the Line.
Thank you.
From Nashville, that's the band Those Darlins, live in the Soundcheck studio, and that is the title track from their most recent album called Blur the Line. The members of Those Darlins, Jesse Zazu singing and playing guitar, Nikki Kavarnis playing guitar, she does some backing vocals, Linwood Regensburg playing the bass and doing some backing vocals. Matt Hearn is touring with the band behind our drum kit today, and Nikki, Jesse, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So, Blur the Line, the album has certainly gotten some attention, but so has the album cover, and especially because it's like, it's four, we see, is it you guys? It's mm-hmm. So it's like kind of a side-on shot of four naked people from like the torso down. And the story goes that you guys actually hung a banner of the album cover on a kind of a busy street there in Nashville. Is that right?
Yeah.
The busiest one.
The busiest one, says Linwood.
I don't know. It's
the point being.
Yeah.
Got a lot of attention.
It did get a lot of attention. But you went and had a banner made of it, so there must have been some idea that, hey, let's, you know, we're going to do something with this. What was the idea?
Well, our intention was kind of just to give Nashville the first preview of our album and to put it out there. We didn't, you know, the only difference between the banner and the cover, it didn't have the name. So we wanted to put the image out there, see what responses it got before it was connected with anyone. And, you know, and it was just kind of like
mixed
an experiment.
Reviews.
Yeah, it was mixed reviews, yeah. It was really funny.
And then when the album came out, I mean, did people know when the banner went up who it was for? Was the album release the big reveal?
That's Nikki's tattoo or whatever.
Yeah.
Put it together. Some people could.
Yeah.
So now where in Nashville do you guys – are you in East Nashville?
Yes.
Okay. So that's like the Williamsburg of Nashville, right?
It's getting to be that way, yeah.
So – lots of bands, but also
mm-hmm. lots of new shops.
Rents
are
rising.
Yeah,
and
rents
stuff
are rising.
Like that.
They're tearing down houses, building new duplexes everywhere.
Right. So in Brooklyn, what's happened is, you know, Williamsburg got red hot, and then everyone had to move to Bushwick, and then Bushwick's gotten red hot.
Yep.
So people are moving east, you know, further east into central Brooklyn. Where do you go after East Nashville?
South Nashville, I think, is where everybody's going.
Yeah, South Nashville.
South Nashville.
Donaldson. Yeah, mm-hmm. Donaldson is going
to
be the new.
Just move to Smyrna.
There's definitely places to go. And there's out down Charlotte, like Whitebridge Road, where the Snow Fox is. That'll probably mm-hmm. be it.
All right. But there are places to play in all these different neighborhoods?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Nashville's pretty small anyway. So if you just move somewhere, it's not like, you know.
It's not like L.A. where now you're 3 hours away instead of one.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're still five or, you know, 6 minutes away.
Someday,
from
though, that way, though. It probably will be.
The members of Those Darlins are here with us in the studio. Jesse Zazu, Nikki Kavarnis, and Linwood Regensburg with Matt Hearn behind our drum kit. You guys want to do In the Wilderness next?
Sure, let's do it.
All right. Once again, the band is called Those Darlins. The album's called Blur the Line. Came out just under a year ago, their third and most recent release. This song is on it. It's called In the Wilderness, and we'll hear a live performance here in the Soundcheck studio.
Yeah.
Song's called In the Wilderness. Those Darlins is the name of the band out of Nashville performing live for us here in our New York studio on Soundcheck. You'll find In the Wilderness on the band's latest album, Blur the Line. Once again, the members of Those Darlins, Nikki Kavarnis singing lead on that one and playing guitar, Jesse Zazu singing and playing guitar, Linwood Regensburg playing bass and some vocals as well. Matt Hearn's behind the drum kit today. And so, Nikki, Jesse sang the first song, and you seem to be playing mostly lead on that one. Here, it's the reverse. Mm-hmm. So how do you guys make that decision? Who's singing lead, who's playing lead?
It's usually, like, whoever
wrote the song.
The initial
idea of
We worked on that song together when we first started it, but it's gone through a bunch of different phases, and it ended up in my lap, and I ended up changing a bunch of lyrics, and I mean, yeah, it depends.
It's usually pretty natural, even if we start a song together. It's just like, yeah, this one's obviously your song. I don't know.
It's got
like
a certain vibe to it.
Talk about.
Okay. So when you guys first started playing together, was the idea, were you heading down this road? Did you know this was the sound you wanted to get to, or has this been...
When me and Jesse first started playing together, we were just goofing around and having a blast. Like, we were not trying to start a band or anything. We were just, like, I think immediately just, what songs do you know? How many songs do you know? Let's play all these songs. Oh, let's try this one. And a lot of, like, trial and error.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our first tour, we just booked to go, like, visit our... It was just, okay, our families live here,
together.
Let's book some shows around. It was all just fun.
And were you writing your own stuff, or were you doing covers?
Yeah, by our first tour, we had written a few of our own. Mm-hmm. We had our first, like, real gig was, like, a restaurant thing in Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
Our
first residency. Ooh. We played there every, like, Friday night or something for 2 hours, and we had to fill 2 hours. It was, like, really hard in the beginning. So we played a ton of covers, but that's when we started writing them because we were just like, we need more songs. And, that's how a lot. And that was really good for us, though, because it helped us figure out what worked, you know, with crowds and what didn't. Because that crowd, like, nobody really cared that there was a band playing. They were all just there to eat and drink. And
it was like half performing, a half comedy.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Just us being really silly. Probably just laughing at ourselves more so than anyone else.
So do you still do that? I mean, is there still, like, banter on stage between songs?
A lot less than there used to
be.
We're like, go in, we do it, and we get out of there.
Yeah, we like to play songs, but, like, back. You know, we don't like there to be a lot of dead space. We kind of just like to play and keep them going, you know. Yeah.
Well, that's what those darlings have been doing for us here in the studio today on Soundcheck. The album is called Blur the Line. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you guys very much for coming and playing for us. Jess, you got a song that you can play us out with?
Yeah, I'm going to sing That Man.
That Man. All right. Another live performance from Those Darlins. Jesse Zazu, Nikki Kavarnis, Linwood Regensburg with Matt Hearn behind the drums. Blur the Line is the name of the latest record from this Nashville-based group. And here they are once again playing live on Soundcheck.
Oh.
That Man by Those Darlins. Coming up, a few of my thoughts on a new film about the man who fell to Earth, David Bowie. The highly anticipated David Bowie Is exhibit opened here in the U.S. today at Chicago's Museum of Contemporary Art. I'll review the documentary about that collection next on Soundcheck. I'm much too fast to take that test. Changes. Turn and face the strain. Changes. Don't wanna be a richer man. To be a different man, time may change me, but I can't trace time. This is Soundcheck, I'm John Schaefer. The exhibit with the ungainly title, David Bowie Is, got rave reviews when it opened at the Victoria and Albert Museum in London last year. Today, it opened in Chicago at the Museum of Contemporary Art. That will be the only place you can see it in the U.S. But a new documentary, also called David Bowie Is, opened tonight at select theaters around the country. Now, let me be clear about this. The documentary is not about David Bowie, per se. It's about the museum exhibit. So I went in thinking, really? You're going to make a movie about a museum exhibit? How's that going to work? The answer is, not so well. On the one hand, the exhibit looks amazing, and with all the film and video that Bowie has done over the years, the exhibition's got lots of motion for something that we think of as being very static. And plenty of the film's best moments come from that treasure trove, including an early version of his hit Space Oddity, and it's not unknown to Bowie fans, but still nice to see it and hear it. This is ground control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade, and the papers want to know whose shirts you wear. Now it's time to leave the capsule if you dare. This is Major Tom to ground control. I'm stepping through the door, and I'm floating in a most peculiar way. But a documentary and a museum exhibit are an uncomfortable fit, and the directors have tried mightily to wrap one around the other with decidedly mixed results. We get lots of bits of museum-goers talking about their Bowie moments, including that famous night in 1972 when Bowie appeared on the hit British TV show Top of the Pops.
We'd only just got a colour TV, so to actually see somebody like that on the screen was probably life-changing.
I just remember hearing my father saying, who the hell is that? Is it a man or is it a woman? I wasn't quite sure.
There's a starman waiting in the sky.
There's Bowie in this kind of skin-tight lyrics jumpsuit with this red hair, putting his arm round another man.
In them days, was not really the done thing.
You weren't allowed to like men with makeup in those days.
And this is primetime TV.
So we show it here in this mirrored room to represent the idea that when he sang, I wanted to call someone, so I picked on you, he was actually talking to all of us.
Had to phone someone, so...
And when he looked down the television screen and pointed at that 12-year-old boy, which was me, I thought I'd been, you know, spoken to through the television set.
He's almost here in this costume now, and he's pointing at me.
But the filmmakers of David Bowie Is periodically give us whole speeches from an event at the V&A Museum in London, including 5 minutes of heavily accented English from the Japanese fashion designer Kansai Yamamoto, which really bring the proceedings to a screeching halt. And about 20 minutes in, I'd already lost track of how many times the word iconic had been used. To give them credit, though, the filmmakers did come up with some really nice moments. They got Jonathan Barnbrook to talk about the process behind the creation of the cover art for Bowie's surprise album of last year, The Next Day. That was pretty good. Even better was Bowie's series of storyboard drawings for a proposed Diamond Dogs movie, which were then animated to give you at least a sense of something that Bowie himself wasn't able to pull off. And, of course, the film does allow you to see things that you wouldn't otherwise see unless you go to Chicago, like Bowie's childhood photo of Little Richard, who apparently was a formative influence.
And David bought this, I think, at a local Woolworths when he was 9 or 10, about 1956, 57. And this is really the starting point of David Bowie's musical interest.
I woke up this morning, Lucy was not in sight. I asked my friends about her, but all they did was touch.
David was really inspired by the excitement of Little Richard as an entertainer. But also because he had this fantastic brass section, famously Lee Allen on tenor sax, superb player. And I think through Little Richard, and obviously also Elvis Presley as well, Bowie began to think about the excitement of being an entertainer, and I suppose ultimately becoming a star.
The film David Bowie Is seems like it might be aimed at Bowie obsessives, but those are exactly the people who will bitch and moan when they start talking about the 1995 album Outside while the background music comes from Ziggy Stardust, or who will notice that we've now seen the same set of handwritten lyrics three times. So, yes, I'm bitching and moaning, but I also sat through the whole thing, and it made me really want to see the exhibit for myself, without the curators telling me what to look at and when. So, to that extent, job done. David Bowie is at the Chicago Museum of Contemporary Art through January 4th.
Though nothing will keep us together, we can beat them.
Tomorrow on the show, you might know Lenny Kravitz from his work in films like The Hunger Games and Lee Daniels' The Butler, or his posh interior design firm, Kravitz Design. And in case you've forgotten, he's also a rock star. He joins us to talk about his many projects, including his new record, Strut. Plus, folk music icon Woody Guthrie isn't always thought of as a New Yorker, but he spent quite a bit of time in the city and wrote several of his most important songs here. Tomorrow, Woody's granddaughter joins us to talk about a new box set that chronicles his New York days through an audio walking tour featuring anecdotes from Bob Dylan, Lead Belly, Pete Seeger, and others. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.